Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host, Alfred Addisk, will be joining James Corbett of the Corbett Report. Yes, today is Thursday, as it happens every Thursday. They will join you for the second and third segment of the program for January 22nd, 2015. And, oh, the world is all a glory. The world markets got their fix today by the European Central Bank. And, of course, the big news was the announcement by Mario Draghi and their 60 billion euro quantitative easing, structured very much in the same manner of Ben Bernanke's bond purchasing program. I'm sure that's where they got all the details on how to do it. And do it without, having any negative downside, all positive upsides. And the announcement to me, there was a lot of fanfare that's been attached to this announcement. I mean, he said, a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, he would do anything that was needed in order to please the markets. They already had a small stimulus program in effect. And obviously, it did little for the countries of the European Union as they had to go and relaunch or launch this bigger and better stimulus program. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Let's see what it did to the markets today. It was interesting because you would have thought that right after the announcement today, the markets would have skyrocketed, but they didn't. The U.S. markets came off their futures highs. And we saw gold fluctuate. We hit a low of gold 1279, but then everything reversed. An incredible day in the index, the dollar today. I mean, it just doesn't get – let's just do the numbers. Gold today up currently 1030 on New York spot price at 1304. Silver's up 23 cents today at 1844. Platinum was up $11 at $1,284. Palladium up 8 at $778. So the precious metals did just fine today. The index up 1.51. Tell me, I'm sure that's probably a record increase on the day. 94.24. And I didn't realize it had gone up as much as it did. Again, it was probably in the last hour of trading where it was really pushed up above the 94. It was mainly in the 93, high 93s for most of the day. Same way with crude oil. Crude oil was down 1.14 at 46.64. paper markets, as I mentioned, when they first made the announcement this morning, they went down, came off went down, opened up. They really took off late in the day, up 263 points at 17,818. The NASDAQ was up 82 points at 4,750. The S&P was up 31 at 2,063. And the 10-year yield, of course, that was up 1.90%, up 0.04. 1.90% on the yield, up 0.04. So it was an interesting day after they took the ultimate policy leap today and introduced the government bond buying program. They'll pump hundreds of billions of dollars of new money into the Eurozone economy, hoping for some inflation. They're going to be purchasing sovereign debt from beginning March until the end of September 2016. And the only one that opposed, or the biggest country that opposed this decision, of course, was Germany's Bundesbank, and concerns in Berlin that it could allow smaller countries to slacken on their economic reforms. And, of course, we do have elections going on this weekend. That's been very mum, not a lot of talk about what's going to happen in Greece. And perhaps after what the Swiss did, detaching themselves from the euro, that perhaps they might do the same thing and probably be the best thing that could happen to Greece. Certainly there'll be some, might not be very pleasant in the beginning, but maybe they really can make it on their own. Maybe they can. Maybe they do need Europe, but we'll just have to see what the elections turn out to be. Together with existing schemes to buy the private debt and funnel hundreds of billions of euros in cheap loans to banks, the new quantitative easing program, they will release 60 billion euros, which is about 68 billion in U.S. dollars, a month into the economy. By September of next year, more than 1 trillion euros will have been created under quantitative easing, and the ECB's last remaining major policy option for reviving their economic growth and trying to ward off deflation. The flood of money in pressed markets, of course, the euro dropped down to 1.14 on the announcement, but the European shares, they hit 7-year highs. The ECB and the central banks of the Eurozone countries will buy up the bonds of proportion to their capital key, meaning more debt will be scooped up from the biggest economies like Germany than from the smaller member states like Ireland. But the big question is, will this stimulus work? And I think the most significant statement made by Draghi was that only 20% of these purchases would be the responsibility of the European Central Bank. This means the bulk of any potential losses, should a Eurozone government default on its debt, would fall on national central banks, which again falls on the citizens. So the ECB has only taken 20% of responsibility in this huge spending announcement, quantitative easing of over $1 trillion in a little over a year. So by September 2016, they will certainly, I think it was 1.4 trillion in U.S. dollars. So again, it falls on the central banks of the country and again on the people's shoulders. They get to bail in. How about that? They should all be very happy of that. And so the critics say, and because of that, it might look like maybe this is the path that could signal that maybe the ECB, the European Central Bank, is preparing for a breakup of the euro. This comes from a former ECB policymaker. He says it does not promote a single monetary policy. He says it's counterproductive to shift the risks of monetary policy to the national central banks. He says this path towards balkanization of monetary policy would signal that the ECB is preparing for a breakup of the euro. So maybe that is coming in their future. You see that euro continue dropping. I'm sure anything that can happen. Draghi said the ECB's governing council, they had been unanimous in agreeing that the step to print money was legally sound. And, of course, all governments say it is legal to just print money. It's all legally sound. Of course it is. We're only taking 20% of the responsibility. We don't have to worry. We don't have to worry about that. And to me, that those are some pretty significant things that you don't hear very many people talking about, only to the immediate response of the increase in the markets and, of course, the drop in the euro. You have to remember that Greece and Cyprus, they remain under the bailout, and they will be eligible for the program, but subject to stricter conditions. And, of course, we can't forget, as I mentioned before, that they do have an election this weekend, the 25th, and if you have that anti-bailout opposition party, Syriza, if that stays on track to emerge as the biggest party in parliament, it should prove to make things interesting once again in the European Union. So I don't personally follow writers who use charts or indicators to see what the price of gold might be and how soon it's going to go up or how soon it's going to buy, if it's time to trade or not to trade. I look to the true fundamentals of gold, what it is, the insurance policy, the protection of your purchasing power. It's a currency. I don't look to charts, but this one kind of caught my eye. Even though there were some gaps in the trend, it was pretty impressive. And this was and again, in relationship to the central bank, European Central Bank, and their purchase of sovereign bonds, the total amount, I guess, the QE bond buying program will be $1.14 trillion. That's $1.31 trillion in U.S. dollars. And altogether, the ECB's balance sheet will expand by a total of 52.8% to 3.3 euro trillion or trillion euros. The ECB's balance sheet will surpass its previous record high that was reached in June of 2012 of 3.1 euro trillion. For the last 9 years straight, gold has followed the ECB's balance sheet extremely closely. In early 2006, when the ECB's balance sheet was only worth $1.08 trillion, gold was just $613 per ounce. But as the ECB expanded its balance sheet by 187% to a peak monthly average of $3.1 trillion, gold's prices also soared by 187% to a peak monthly average of $1,700 per ounce. Both the ECB's balance sheet and gold began their pullbacks at exactly the same time, dipped the same percentage from their highs, bottomed together, and are now rapidly rising together. And this was published by the NIA. They have various charts and so forth. And now this chart following the ECB's balance sheet and gold, they will rise between now and, of course, the end of their program, September of 2016. And they forecast that by the time the ECB's initial bond buying program is over, gold will be at a new all-time nominal high of over $2,000. So when you look at the chart, and I can't show you the chart, it'd be a great one to put in our newsletter this weekend. If you'd like to go to our website and sign up for the newsletter, we can put that in there. It is really interesting to see how there was times when they kind of dipped a little bit, where they broke away from the trend. But it was really interesting to see how straight on it was. So another sign, if you believe in charts, if you want to follow those trends, it's a very interesting one to see. There were some numbers that came out with American Express. They plan to cut more than 4,000 jobs over the next year. The CEO, Ken Chenal, said in a release that tight controls on the cost side of the ledger had benefited the company, and the company posted fourth quarter earnings per share of $1.39 compared to $1.21 a share in the year earlier period. So let's just get rid of those people. Let's do 4,000 and we could become even bigger one percenters of the world. And there was a report out. The overall report to me didn't seem that it was really that big, but it shows a trend. Now, this trend begins after the crisis, the global economic crisis, 2007-2008. There were 11 million people that were expected to lose their jobs in the current decade. Over 212 million people around the world will be jobless by 2019, and this is according to the International Labor Organization, ILO. By 2019, more than 212 people will be out of work, and that is up from the current 201. In the coming years, global unemployment is expected by the ILO to continue its upward trend. Global unemployment is expected to increase by 3 million in 2015. And, you know, 3 million doesn't seem like a lot when you look at the overall population of the world. But yet the trend is more and more unemployment, higher and higher unemployment. Therefore, it shows that all the stimulus in the world is not going to change things. It's going to make our stock markets higher. It's going to make the people feel better, and they'll go out and they'll spend some money. And that is what they're trying to do. They're conditioning the people. It's a psychological move, and you know, it does get things churning. And you know, we've seen in certain areas of where the U.S., certainly the oil industry, has made a big impact on the number of jobs in this country and on the bottom line of this country. This organization, the ILO, said more than 61 million jobs had been lost since the start of the global crisis, and their projections show that unemployment will continue to rise until the end of the decade. This means the job crisis is far from over. So there is no place for complacency. And they also warned of widening inequality gap, observing that the richest 10% currently earn almost 40% of the total global income, while the poorest 10% receive between 2 and 7%. Whether the numbers are big or not on the scale of things, as I mentioned before, again, we're looking. It doesn't seem like the world will get better except for those in the 1%. You know, the rich just keep getting richer. And I was going to talk a little bit about oil. There was some big job losses or job cuts that were announced earlier this week. And there was some info coming out from BP. They're planning on low oil prices for years to come. And we'll talk about oil tomorrow. I wanted to get to the few specials that we have. We have a small package special today, 90% quarters and dimes, $25 face value. And that price, it's a steal, a limited supply, $370. That includes your shipping, 90% quarters and dimes, $25 face value. Folks, I was giving this special when silver was $17. We were able to get it at a low price. I'm still extending that low price to you. That is why it's in a limited supply. So give us a call. We also continue the Mint State 61 $20 Liberties or State certified by NGC or PCGS, $1,445. That's like $70, $80 above a gold eagle coin. And we also have a 1 ounce gold buffalo coin. It's only $9 more than a gold eagle, and that is also certified Mint State 69. That's a terrific price for gold buffaloes. Give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And we're heading to break here, and stay tuned for Alfred and James Corbett.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Meat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Our guest is James Corbett of the Corbett Report, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. James has been living and working in Japan for 11 years now. He started the Corbett Report 8 years ago as an outlet for independent critical analysis of politics, society, history, and economics. He's also editorial writer of the International Forecaster, weekly electronic newsletter created by the recently deceased economic analyst Bob Chapman. And so we're talking to James. He's in Japan in the morning time, and we're here in Dallas at, I don't know, am I here earlier than you, or am I here later than you right now, James?
I think technically that would be earlier than me.
We're here earlier. We'll catch up with James, and I don't know, we'll catch up with James in several hours. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing today?
Just fine. just fine. Let's start with the problem that jumped up at people from the Swiss removal of the peg for the Swiss franc relative to the euro. A lot of people were surprised, not so much that it simply happened, but some people reacted as if the consequences were much greater than anyone, perhaps even the Swiss National Bank, had anticipated. Do you think it was more bang than they expected for their buck, or much ado about nothing?
No, it's definitely ado about something, and yeah. I'm not sure what their expectation was particularly, but I think this was a move that was more of necessity than it was of choice. I don't think there was a great deal of choice here. I think everyone realized that this artificial Swiss franc floor that they had in place had to go at some point, and it was just a question of when. I just don't think anyone in the world was expecting it to happen last week. And for those who don't know the details of this, basically the Swiss National Bank back in 2011 decided to create a floor for the franc versus the euro so that the franc would not go under 1.2 francs to the euro. That was the exchange rate that they decided would be the floor, and they would make sure that the euro would not, that the franc would not appreciate against that. However, that's been an extremely, extremely expensive policy to maintain as the euro continues to be deflated and devalued and inflated away into nothing. And that means that...
And as a result, the Swiss franc was also subject to deflation.
Well,
I assume that's what's happening. Is that true?
Well, yes, more or less. So every time it was coming up against that 1.2, the Swiss National Bank would have to buy euros and or sell francs in order to try to devalue the currency in line with the euro. But of course, constantly buying euros is an expensive operation in a number of ways. And
is it anything like constantly buying dollars?
It really is. So basically, Switzerland was in some way subsidizing the money printing from the eurozone, and that's about to be exacerbated greatly by what is expected to be. I'm not sure when this interview is going to air, but on Thursday morning Europe time.
Yeah.
Thursday afternoon.
Thursday
afternoon Europe time. Draghi is going to announce that everyone is expecting he will announce there's going to be a new European stimulus program. They're expecting somewhere in the range of 600 to 700 billion euro program. And there's so many different things that are going to fall out from that. So that's the reason I think the Swiss National Bank decided to decouple the currencies right now. It's because they didn't want to basically subsidize that money printing in Europe by having to buy euros in order to devalue their currency against the euro. So they've just let it float. And of course, just letting the controls go like that with no forewarning of any sort has had huge effects throughout the global economy. It had some effects on the stock markets, but perhaps more importantly, on foreign currency brokers. There's quite a few that have gone belly up around the world, in New Zealand, in the UK, other places. There's a major U.S. Foreign currency broker who is in serious trouble right now because of this. So it's had some huge effects on the markets, and the markets are still processing what this all means in light of what Draghi will or will not announce with regards to European stimulus. So some pretty big moves are taking place, and they're all kind of interlinked and interrelated. And in fact, the latest one, just a few hours before we started recording here, apparently the Bank of Canada has slashed its prime lending rate down to 0.75 from 1. That's another surprise move by a central bank. No one was expecting the Bank of Canada to do that. And the message is, people out there, please borrow more money. Please, let's not slip into deflation. But of course, the actual message, if you're reading between the lines, is exactly the opposite. The Canadian economy is going into the doldrums, and this is a good time to pay down your debts if you know which side your bread is buttered on.
We have, I'm looking at a report from 24 Hour Gold, and one of the points in there, in the aftermath of the Swiss National Bank decoupling from the euro, it says, "Why didn't you tell us you were going to end the peg?" bleats International Monetary Fund's chief, Christine Lagarde. Now, whether or not she really didn't know is not known to me. I think she didn't know they were going to do it, though. And if the Swiss National Bank is acting unilaterally without other central banks, other banks and central banks realizing what's happening, it indicates that the thieves may be falling out. And what we're seeing here is evidence that banks are no longer acting in concert. It's turning into every man for himself. And we see more evidence of that in Canada, right, where the Canadians, from what you were just saying, the Canadians have said, hey, we're going to change things and do what's best for Canada, and we're not even giving anyone any notice. We're just going to make this happen. What are the implications of this? Are they going to be able to maintain, hold everybody marching to the beat of the same drummer, or is this the beginning of every man for himself and some sort of disintegration?
Well, I think you've touched on the most interesting aspect of this whole story, because I, like you, I don't know whether or not whether Lagarde or anyone else knew in advance. I'm willing to believe that they did not. But the fact that they that the story that has developed from this Swiss National Bank maneuver is, you know, we didn't know, this was a surprise, it caught the markets off guard, and because of that, everything's going going haywire. That's an interesting story in and of itself, because what it tells us is this manufactured reality that we've stepped into of central banks dictating the course of the economy is only maintained when all of the central banks are acting more or less in unison, or at any rate when they are informed ahead of time of what's coming and everything is telegraphed to the markets. That's the way a centrally planned economy works. Sudden surprise decisions that no one has any time to prepare for tend to have huge effects and can be quite chaotic, whereas everyone appreciates when, for example, a Greenspan or a Bernanke or a Yellen or, you know, fill in the central banker, make some obscure statement in a press conference about irrational exuberance or whatever, you know, keyword phrase that they use.
Janet Yellen said patience, and we had a record high of the Dow Jones. The market moves on one word.
And everyone has to turn to that page in their central banker dictionary and, well, what does he mean by this? And, oh, so now we can expect this. And that's the way this game works. And it is a game. It is a game that's being played with the economic world because, once again, the economy is fundamentally about transactions and interactions between people, and those transactions come with them expectations of what is going to take place in the future. So they are trying to set that reality ahead of time, and when someone doesn't play by that rule book, it throws the entire world into chaos and turmoil.
It saps confidence. Even if you don't like what the central banks are doing, you can have a certain amount of confidence that they have a power, sufficient power, to do what they want to do. All by itself, just having that power, whether you think it's good or bad, it inspires a kind of confidence. Maybe you celebrate that confidence, maybe it's grudging confidence, but once you see that, whoops, wait a second, these guys aren't really in control, that detracts from confidence. And confidence, a psychological concept, is key, critical, the operation of the whole system, as are expectations. And this is one of the things that disturbs me about this. We see markets that are running not on the basis of objective reality. What is the profit and loss? How deep in debt is this particular corporation? How's it doing financially? Now, that's not the kind, nobody's concerned about that. I won't say no one's concerned. That's not true. But what they're mostly concerned about are not the investments, but the investors. What is the psychology of the investors? That's what the Dow Jones is measuring. More so, I can't even say more so, but at least significantly. It's measuring the psychology of the investors rather than the objective and financial realities of the corporations. And that strikes me as strange. It strikes me as dangerous. If this thing is running on psychological issues, it's just evidence that it can't be stable. Do you agree with that, or do you think I'm missing the boat?
I think you're on the right boat, and or you're heading in the right direction, but maybe I would choose a different boat. Because I think that the Dow and the S&P and other figures like that are part of that psychological manipulation as well, because those numbers are based largely these days on derivatives trading, on high-frequency trading, on things that don't actually really directly measure investor confidence or lack thereof. I think that the whole, all of that, all of those numbers that we're asked to keep our eyes on are part of the psychological manipulation to get us once again to believe that the system, as you say, even if you don't like what the central banks are doing, to at least believe that they have the power to do what they're doing, which again, the power actually comes from our belief in that power. It's a remarkable system. And I would throw in the standard Wizard of Oz analogy, the man behind the curtain, as in the central bankers are the man behind the curtain, don't look behind the curtain. But it's actually particularly apt because people who know the actual history of the writing of the Wizard of Oz know that that was a story about the late 19th century, early 20th century movement to establish bimetallism in the United States as the currency backing, as in gold and silver, as opposed to a gold standard or as opposed to paper. And you see that in all of the imagery encoded into that story. The yellow brick road is gold, and the Emerald City is the green fiat currency. And the ruby slippers were actually originally silver slippers, and that was the way home. So it's actually very apt in this case that the central bankers really are the man behind the curtain. They're pulling levers, and it has this spectacular effect. We see the Wizard of Oz, but it really is an illusion. And it's hard, I think, for people who are immersed in the details of all of the mechanics of all of these systems to see the bigger picture like that. But I think it is important that we keep that bigger picture in mind, because what it means ultimately at base is, if we believe in this story, then we can continue to basically maintain this system, which, of course, as we know, is heavily manipulated against the interests of most of the people. But if we stop believing in that, if we start concentrating on different methods of relating and transacting with each other in this economy, we can actually change the fundamental way that the system is operating. And that's, I think, what the central bankers don't want you to know. They don't want you to pull back the curtain and see what they really are.
I agree with you, but when you say you can change it, that we can change it, if we perceive this correctly, we can change the system. I think if we perceive it correctly, we can see that the system is fraudulent and fragile and perhaps beginning to collapse even as we speak, although it might not, they may be able to survive for several more years. I don't know. I can't say how long that is. We can maybe cause the system to collapse with our loss of confidence in it, but can we change it and put something more positive in its place?
One thing to tear down, another thing to put something in its place. Yes, you're right to make that distinction, because the awareness is the first half of that, and that has to be the penny that drops that, metaphorically speaking, that gets us to question the system. But you're right, that in and of itself does not supplant the system that we're in. The only way to actually change the system itself is with elbow grease, to roll up our sleeves and to get to work. And that can be, you know, that's not a fun or easy thing, and it's not simply going to fall into place. And that could be, as I've talked about on my program many, many, many times in many different ways, it can be everything from starting your own victory garden is one way of getting involved in that. But, of course, participating in the local communities, the farmers markets, seed sharing, crop sharing, cow dairy sharing operations, raw milk, that kind of thing. Trading in local currencies, participating in community credit unions, things of that nature are ways that we can stop giving our time, effort, energy, lifeblood, which is what money really is, to these central bankers. And it's not going to be, as I've always stated, it's not going to be a 100% changeover overnight. But those are the types of ways, the release valves for the system that we can start working on and expanding the scope and meaning of those while we have this moment of opportunity, while we still are living in what would, I mean, it's clearly a manipulated economic reality, but at any rate, most of us have some amount of time and leisure and space and ability to to start something as simple as planting some seeds in your back garden. And I think, again, that can be a good analogy for the process in general, because from small seeds, great things may come. And that's the whole point of it. We have to start using this space of opportunity to start reconstructing the economic reality that we want. And I realize there are people with very large, you know, investments and portfolios and nest eggs that don't want to hear about this particularly, because they're heavily invested in whatever 401k or whatever they're hoping to retire on. I understand that, and different people in different stages of their life will have different ways of relating to this idea, because they're going to be in different, you know, investing modes. But as I say, you know, if the generation coming up does not understand that this system that we're working in right now is not only likely to collapse, but I think is destined to collapse.
Yeah, that's guaranteed. It's an absolute fact.
It's only
we just can't give you the time.
It collapses.
You know, it may be coming. It's undoubtedly coming. Is it coming in the next 90 days, or is it coming in the next 5 years? That's the hard part, is to pick that point. I'd bet it's closer to 90 days than it is to 5 years, but closer could be a year, could be 2 years, who can say. We're going to take a break for some more commercials. We'll be back in a moment with James Corbett from the Corbett Report, CorbettReport.com. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand. Have a plan. Have peace and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here on the Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Our guest is James Corbett from the Corbett Report, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com, CorbettReport.com. We've been talking about the problems that have developed out of Swiss National Bank decoupling from the euro. They were pegged to the euro. The Swiss franc was set at 1.2, you know, per euro back on 6th of September in 2011. And I'm reading from an article that points out an interesting coincidence, and you may be already aware of this, but that's the same day gold peaked at $1,920 per ounce. Now, they set the peg for the Swiss franc to the euro at 1.2 on the same day gold peaked, and since then, price of gold has been generally downhill up until just in the last month or two that you could begin to say maybe we've seen a bottom on this. Are we just looking at a coincidence? Did it just happen to be? Or do you think there was any causality involved in the fact that the Swiss franc was pegged to the euro, and once that peg was established, gold began to fall?
Well, let's put it this way. What has happened to the price of gold since the announcement of the SNB last week?
It's been pretty good.
Yeah, it's risen.
Yeah, you
by, I think, $100 or so.
It's been up. It's up $115 in the last 30 days.
Yeah.
All right. Since last Thursday, I suppose, it's up 45, 50 bucks. I don't know exactly, but somewhere in that neighborhood. But it seems a little far-fetched to me, but it is an interesting coincidence if that's all it is.
Well, I think we can quite obviously see that gold in the last week has risen because of the safe haven bet, basically, that investors are making right now. They've seen the sort of carnage that took place last week as a result of the announcement, and they saw that now we have large foreign currency brokers going belly up and things of this nature. We don't know how it's going to play out in the markets yet, so let's find a safe place to go. That's why every single sovereign bond fell last week. The yields increased as a result of all of this money going into the bond market, except for Greece, of course. It should be noted where the bonds still continue to do bad. Surprise, surprise. I should say the yields are going down. The yield went up in Greece, as usual. But also, of course, gold is the other safe haven, and that's why the money flowed into that. Now, is the reverse true back in 2011? Was that gold money coming out of the gold markets and into what exactly? Into the markets? Because they knew that the Swiss National Bank was now going to be more or less backing up the euro. I mean, that's one way of kind of looking at that trade. And yes, I mean, I think there was absolutely some extent to which that was true. I don't know if that can account for everything. I mean, I think there are other things going on in the gold market, but I think that was one important part of it. And so now we're seeing the unwinding of that. Have we hit a bottom with gold? That's debatable. I mean, there you've got people like Harry Dent saying it's going down to 700, and you have other people on the other side of that equation saying it's going to the moon. And I'm not particularly convinced or swayed one way or another. I certainly do expect it to be at its current trading range for the foreseeable future until the unforeseeable future of tomorrow, when we'll find out what the ECB decision is and what way it looks. And I think, again, this European Central Bank decision that Draghi is going to make on the stimulus and how it will be structured is going to be exceptionally important. In fact, potentially important for the fate of the Eurozone itself. And that's because there are some deep internal tensions in the Eurozone right now, as there have been for many years, I should state.
Oh, really, centuries.
Yes. Well,
I mean,
exactly,
when the idea that you can put all of those European nations together and get them to sing Kumbaya after they've been fighting with each other for centuries. Right? This has never been a stable place exactly.
No, of course not. And on top of that political tension, now we have the financial tension of wedding all of these different economies together in a single European central bank that's trying to manage a single currency for these vastly disparate economies, from Germany in the north down to Greece and Italy and Spain. These economies have very little in common and, in fact, are in completely different tendencies. So trying to manage that is, I mean, it would be nightmarish even if they had the best of intentions. But, of course, from the German perspective,
and if situation were
Germany
going
has
well,
an albatross around its neck, and that albatross is called Greece or Spain or Italy or whatever the crisis part of the globe is at the next moment. So, I mean, that tension of fighting over the direction of the Eurozone itself has certainly been there since the creation of the Eurozone and has been exacerbated by the problems in recent years. And so now they're trying to figure out how to structure this European stimulus and whether individual national central banks will have to kick in for this, or whether it will all be ECB stimulus, and how they'll ring fence those economies that are not doing well. And that could inflame tensions with Germany or France or some of the stronger economies. I mean, it's a very interesting situation right now, and is bringing to a head a lot of these tensions.
You know, we have meetings going on in Davos right now to figure out what's going to happen, how they're going to continue to organize perhaps the new world order and whatever. Are they caught in a situation where they must all of a sudden say, wait a second, we had plans, we were going to do them here at the meeting, and it may even be the European Central Bank. They had plans, they're going to do it, they had a certain idea in mind for tomorrow, and then the Swiss National Bank said, ha ha, surprise, surprise, we're decoupling. Has that set some of their plans on the back burner, or caused them to say, wait, what are we going to do now?
I think it has at least caused second thoughts about this, because I think there was a consensus that Draghi was going to announce something at the Thursday meeting as of last week, before the Swiss National Bank made its announcement. I think that basically now Draghi is committed to this, because the markets have now priced in a type of rebound rally on the idea that the Eurozone is going into stimulus mode. So now the markets have priced that in. If he doesn't announce tomorrow, there will be, I think, even more carnage. I mean, we'll see stocks dropping like a rock if he doesn't announce. So I think he now has a gun to his head, basically making him announce tomorrow, even if that was the plan, original game plan or not. There are some people who are speculating that that announcement wasn't going to come till later this year. So now it looks like he's kind of backed into a corner where it has to be tomorrow. So
he has to make an announcement tomorrow. I'll give you that.
Exactly.
I would agree he's got to make an announcement. But does he announce 500 billion euros? Does he announce 700 billion euros? And does he announce it basically all at once? We're going to give it to you all at once? Or does he drag it out 50 billion a month for the next 5, 10 months?
In this case,
12 months,
absolutely.
Whatever?
I mean, the devil is in the details with this one, for sure. I mean, it's not even just the number itself. It's, as I say, how it's structured and which banks will be expected to kick in what and in what manner and over what period of time and what will be the out point. I mean, will this be a QE infinity where they say it's tied to the unemployment rate or whatever, some sort of a manipulated number that they can choose to basically end it whenever they want? Or will it be some specific targets, some specific numbers, some specific date? I mean, there's so many different variables here that can all be jiggered, so that no matter what is announced in terms of an overall number, it's really, I mean, depends on how it's actually structured.
What's their real objective? What's Draghi's real objective? Now, I know he's going to say that he wants to create inflation. They want to avoid deflation. They want to thereby stimulate the European economy. Those are the reasons that are publicized. But is it possible that they also want inflation not simply to stimulate the economy, but to wipe out part of whatever debt is owed by major institutions and governments?
There's an element of that. Certainly it works out for those debtor nations during a time of inflation. But, I mean, I think that they're... From a perspective where we imagine that central bankers are really doing what they say they're doing and the economy really functions like they say it functions, I mean, there is a value to the idea of trying to kickstart some inflation where you're starting to go into a time of deflation, because a healthy economy will be expanding and hopefully at just enough of a rate that it will just sort of outstrip the sort of base of the economy wants, so that the economy can continue growing. I mean, that's the idea that we're
going
to grow.
That's the theory, but you know, will that work forever, or is there a limit that's built in that you're going to encounter sooner or later, where you say can't inflate anymore?
Clearly, there's a limit.
Yeah, I know. There's the problem, and are we there, or nearly there?
Well, I think the answer to that has to come in the fact that these announcements keep getting bigger and more important and more hangs on them, and the consequences are greater when there are market disturbances like what the S&P did last month or last week. I mean, that's, I think, a sign. I mean, the volatility itself and the amount that of the type of overall stimulus that's being talked about is a sign that there is something extremely wrong in the underlying picture of what's going on, to the point where now, of course, we expect stimulus in the hundreds of billions, if not trillion dollar level, which, I mean, let's cast our minds back. Even a few years ago, even a decade ago, these types of numbers were, I mean, staggering, mind-boggling. We've become very much used to them, which just goes to show that they just have to keep increasing the sort of size and scope of the game in order to keep the players at the table. And that's
if
a worrying sign.
Because, again, the addicts need a bigger fix, an ever bigger fix in order to sustain their addiction. We're all addicted to this fiat currency right now, or at least the governments are, and a debt-based monetary system. And the only way this continues, they got to keep going deeper and deeper and deeper into debt. Again, it's like a crack addict needs, you know, bigger hit, bigger hit, bigger hit. You get to a point where you got to have more and more and more, and there's an end to this. There's an article from Bloomberg, Banks Battle Speculation, Denmark's Euro Peg at Risk. Now, this is interesting because just 3 or 4 days before the Swiss National Bank unpegged the Swiss currency from the euro, the head of the Swiss National Bank assured the world that there were absolutely no plans to do so. Later, he explained that the decoupling had to be a surprise. All right, and it was a big surprise for a bunch of different reasons, but he couldn't tell anybody. That's his explanation of this. Now, what's interesting is in the last just couple of days, we've had 12 denials. I think it was maybe Monday of this week, by the National Bank of Denmark, or at least Denmark. I won't say National Bank. Danish Prince, Denmark. That's all I'm going to say. They have denied that they're going to decouple the Danish krone from the euro. Doth Denmark protest too much? I mean, it's a little bit like a takeoff on Hamlet. You know, I think methinks the lady doth protest too much. Methinks Denmark doth protest too much. Are they going to suddenly say, that's it, we're out of here? They're the last currency that's pegged to the euro, if I understand correctly.
It's absolutely possible. I don't think we can take too much away from denials like that, because either way, they don't really tell us much. If they are planning it, then yes, it may just be a surprise. If they're not planning it, then they really might be serious when they say, no, we're not planning to do it. So I don't know if we can take anything away from a statement like that.
Again, Agatha Christie, and then there were none.
Yeah.
You know, this is one
exactly.
of those dramas where they're the last one right now that's pegged to the euro, and it seems inevitable that they're going to break loose. And I don't know how significant that'll be. Switzerland has a lot more psychological effect. We associate Switzerland with money. People have done that for centuries. And certainly we have throughout your lifetime and mine. You want to get a Swiss bank account, Swiss deal of gold, so on. They're money-oriented. Denmark doesn't carry the same psychological effect, but you can't help but wonder. If Denmark decouples their peg from euro, are we going to see another episode, something like the Swiss National Bank? And we've only got about 15 seconds for you to answer.
In 15 seconds or less, I would say that, yes, you're right. I mean, Switzerland is a safe haven for banking, for gold, for investment. So that's more important in economically speaking. But Denmark, you're right. I mean, it is important as the last kind of euro peg holdout. Mm-hmm. I think it's a sign the euro is, extremely precarious at the very least.
I agree. Give you 5 more seconds. What's going to happen to the euro? Is this going to survive? And if it does, will the European Union survive?
I hope not. But we'll see so much tomorrow what's going to happen, and I'll be writing about it in the Forecaster this weekend.
All right. James, thanks for being on the program. This is James Corbett from the Corbett Report, Corbett report.com. James will be back next Wednesday evening, and we will talk to you at that time. Thank you, James. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. Be back mañana. Bye-bye.
The bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got to be a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball. Money, money, always.